Picture this. Through his lens, Jaime Rojo weaves enchanting visual tales that not only mesmerize the public, but also shine a spotlight on urgent environmental issues. Today, we get the chance to sit down with him. Jaime is a WILD trustee, a photographer, and a National Geographic explorer. His most recent project includes Monarchs on the Brink, a captivating visual exploration of monarch butterflies where Jaime highlights the challenges they face and introduces us to the individuals committed to their protection. Join us as Jaime demonstrates how storytelling can reshape the narrative around endangered species, inspiring action and fostering a stronger connection to preservation. Welcome to the WILD Foundation podcast short format series, Conservation Capsule. Imagine being able to quickly take a capsule, a pill, a dose of something that helps you retain crucial insight in the realm of nature conservation. Well, we've got just that for you. Through our Conservation Capsule series, we're handing you the effective dosage of words of wisdom from the environmental world's best and brightest. Let's dive in. Okay, hello, hello. We are joined today by Jaime Rojo, which is an honor to have you here. Thank you so much for joining us today. I feel like I know you. I haven't met you yet, but my whole life I've heard so much about you. So it's truly a pleasure to sit down and have a conversation with you today. Can you tell the WILD audience a little bit about who you are and what you work so hard to protect and save?
Thank you very much, Jackie. I feel the same, actually. You know, my history with the WILD Foundation is long. I will briefly tell you, I am a conservation photographer and a National Geographic explorer, and I have been working in conservation stories for almost 2 decades now, no? But before I became a professional photographer, I was a full-time conservationist. And in one of my projects, I got in contact with the WILD Foundation, and I ended up organizing the World Wilderness Congress, WILD, no, WILD 9, in Mexico in 2009. And ever since, I have been very close to the organization. I think we are very much aligned in our vision and the importance of wilderness for wildlife, for people. And it's such a pleasure to be here today to be talking about these things.
It's so fun. I have a million questions to ask you because, of course, the work that you've done is powerful and impactful and very necessary. I do want to ask, WILD 9 was... Well, at that Congress, the Spanish word for wilderness was created, right? Am I getting that correct? And it's salvaje, right?
Finding the right word to define wilderness in Spanish was a very tricky question. And for someone that was raised in Southern Europe, in Western Europe, the concept of wilderness just didn't exist in my mind, no? So the challenge when we were doing WILD 9 was to come up with a concept that would be as evocative as wilderness is in English. So after long discussions in which we discovered that there were challenges between the Spanish we speak in Europe and the Spanish that is spoken in Latin America, we came up with the concept of tierras silvestres.
Right. Okay. That's it. I was like, I know I'm not correct. Yes. There we go. Okay.
So it's slightly different than salvaje, which was my first option. And I really wanted to push for salvaje, but in Latin America, salvaje, or at least in Mexico, where we were doing the Congress, had some connotations that some members of the board, they were not completely sure that it would work for the Latin American audience. So we came up with the concept of tierra silvestre.
Got it. Okay. I love that. That's fascinating. I'm so fascinated by the way that words capture entire concepts, but also, I mean, kind of bringing it back to what you do, how art and photography can convey these really large narratives of the issues that we're facing and drawing people into that. So can you tell us a little bit about the work that you've done? I mean, we can dive into the monarch work that you've done too, but can you talk a little bit about the power of photography and the narratives that that creates for a wider audience and why that's so important in the conservation world?
Sure. When I first started as a photographer, as an amateur, like many of us, photography opened the door to an easy way to communicate my passion about nature, about conservation to other people. So I started as a kid, sharing with family, with friends. It was a way of sharing my field adventures with some people. But later on, I moved to Mexico to work with Patricio Robles Gil, who is a photographer and conservationist from Mexico, who has been my mentor. Working with Patricio and working in conservation in Mexico, I discovered how powerful was the photography to convey the message. So at that moment, I was like 70% of my time was conservation and 30% of my time was photography. But slowly the two worlds were colliding and eventually it flipped. And when I became a full-time professional, then I really, really grasped the power of photography. I realized that if I wanted to do my best for the planet, I needed to do it on where my passion was. And I had never been brave enough to take the leap of faith to become a full-time photographer. And now that I did it, well, it's been a long time now, but when I did it, I realized like it was the greatest decision of my life. Because now I continue to work in conservation, which is the other passion that I have, but I do it from a point of view of full passion for photography. And that is really important because when you put your heart and your energy and all the enthusiasm on something like photography, which I love, then all the good things happen. And the combination of both things, photography and conservation, is just such a powerful tool. And many friends of the Wild Foundation know this because there's many, many great photographers that have been my mentors that have been at some point associated with the Wild Foundation.
Absolutely. And that's a huge reason that I love the multimedia world. I think it's an incredible way to pull people into these larger issues that they might not necessarily know about. I'm fascinated by the world that we live in today that's so saturated with visual images. As a conservation photographer, how do you pinpoint or focus on things that you know will capture attention? You know, like how do you know that what you're going to capture, how do you make it stand out from this really saturated environment of pictures and of media?
No, it's a very good question. As conservation, all the conservation photographers will always tell you, our work starts once we have taken the images, no? Once we have made the images is when you get some involvement in the topic. So I think it's very important to choose the stories or the projects that you're working on. That can make a big difference. I also believe in long-term commitment. To give you an example on this story of monarch butterflies, I have spent 20 years of my life working on it. So when you invest that much time and energy on a story, you become very knowledgeable and it becomes part of your life. So you get really involved and engaged with the communities that work around conservation. So choosing the right stories that you care about, and being honest with your messaging. Like, we live in a world that is saturated by images. You cannot compete with the avalanche of beautiful photographs that you see every day on Instagram. So I believe that what makes the difference is what happens behind the curtain, what happens with the individual commitment that each of us make to protect the species that we work in or the regions that we work on.
I love that. And so, I mean, immediately the thing that pops into my mind is, let's talk about monarchs. You know, 20 years of your life, that's a long commitment. That's longer than a lot of friendships, a lot of relationships. Tell me more. I mean, what about this species really just has captivated you? And your work is not done with that species, you know? So tell us more.
One important thing is that I don't want to discourage any photographer that you don't need 20 years to complete the story on a species. It was completely circumstantial in my case. So to give you a little bit of context, it was the early 2000s. I had just moved from Spain to Mexico and I had spent just barely a few days in my new country. And on the first weekend, I had the opportunity to visit the monarch butterfly sanctuaries in Michoacán, and I got fascinated with the spectacle. It's just amazing. You see a million butterflies fluttering around you. The sound is spectacular. So I knew it was something special. And because I was working in Mexico City in an office, a conservation organization, I needed something close to my office that I could work on in the afternoons, in the weekends. So I started doing like short trips to see the monarchs and to document the sanctuary. And eventually, I would like to say, like, the storytelling impulse took me a little bit further. No, I wanted to know more, not just the beauty of the sanctuaries, but I quickly realized that the numbers were going down from the first time I had seen them to the later visits that I had done. So I started to investigate and to research a lot about the species, and I discovered that there were problems all along the migratory route, and I started doing more personal trips, and I expanded my coverage to the US and Canada. And then eventually, one particular photo won a World Press Photo Award, and that gave me a lot of visibility. And I got the opportunity to meet with National Geographic and to pitch the idea for the first time. Back then, the moment wasn't right, but I persisted and I insisted, and I finally got the project of my life. I got a grant from National Geographic Society and an assignment from National Geographic Magazine. And combining those two, I was able to spend overall 2 years working in a complete photo story on the monarch butterflies that is just impressive. It's the cover story of the January 2024 issue of National Geographic Magazine. So it's super exciting. And the story focuses on, we kind of gave it a positive spin. Like, there's so many people trying to protect the monarchs. It's amazing. It's the species with the biggest fan base that I have ever seen. Like, from indigenous communities in Mexico to retired volunteers in Canada, scientists, farmers in Iowa, everybody is trying to do something in their little field of expertise to protect the monarchs. It's a very dear species, and that made me feel that it was going to be a story that would reach out far and wide.
First of all, congratulations on the cover of the January 2024 National Geographic. I know that our team has ordered a few because we're so thrilled that that has happened and that this story is really getting pushed out. You mentioned storytelling, and how has that impacted the way that, I mean, you say you put a positive spin, you know, a little bit, and you show the positive side of this, but how do you incorporate storytelling into the work that you do, and why is it so important in your opinion? Because, you know, we live in a world where everyone's like, here's the science. The science should sway you. And that's really what you should focus on. And as you know, at Wild, we're firm believers in the stories that people have to share. So it's kind of, a little bit of a biased question because I firmly believe in storytelling, but I'd love to hear your perspective on how you incorporate that and why it's so important.
I think storytelling is in our DNA. You know? We grew up as a species. We evolved listening to stories around the fire. It's the way we communicated with each other. And it continues to be one of the most powerful forces to trigger change in our society. So I don't think anyone doubts about the power of storytelling, no? From politics to conservation to science, you know that if you communicate with good stories, the work you're doing, either if you are a politician or a photographer, you are going to reach the heart of the people, which is the key. Because science speaks a very important language, and it's great to have the facts and to make informed decisions. But science sometimes, not always, because science combined with storytelling is amazing, but science had a long history of being prohibited for the massive audiences. Like, we wouldn't understand what's going on with science. But photography speaks the language of emotions, no? Like the art. And when you trigger an emotion in the audience with one picture, like, the perfect picture for me first has to be beautiful, then it has to trigger some kind of emotion, and then it has to tell you a beautiful story. That's the perfect picture. And you cannot always make perfect pictures, but when you combine 3 or 4 like that with other more informative or just beauty shots, then your story starts to go in one direction. So I truly believe in the power of visual storytelling to change the world.
Yeah, so do I. I just want to put it out there. So do I. I mean, that's, you know, a huge reason that I wanted to get into the environmental world was touching people through stories. And through conversations, which is why we've started this podcast, because we find that it's people can really relate to listening to real conversations with real individuals who are just working on a day-to-day basis to create positive change. So again, thank you for being here and talking about that experience. In terms of, you know, what's next for you and how this Monarch project has led into your next few projects and all of that, can you tell us a little bit about where your work is taking you next?
One of the things that I was very excited about when working with Monarchs is that this story is very timely right now, because as you know, the Endangered Species Act of the United States is turning 50. No, it's the 50th anniversary, and the monarchs are under discussion. No, so it's a very controversial issue in a way, because if monarchs are listed as endangered species, then there will be more restrictions for science. There will be more restriction for all the people that raise monarchs and release them with educational purposes. So it's a very interesting conversation that the science community is having about this. And for me, it's very difficult to express my opinion. All I know is that the moment to talk about monarchs is now, not just because of this, but also because next year it will be the 50th anniversary of the discovery of the sanctuaries in Mexico. Believe it or not, only until the mid-1970s we discover, or the Western world, or however we want to call it, discover where the monarchs were spending the winters. All we knew was that all the monarchs in Canada and the US would disappear in the fall and they would go south. That was all we know. So that discovery was such a big deal. When you speak with the local communities in Mexico, it's funny because they tell you how little importance would they give to these butterflies. They thought it was a pest.
Wow.
You know, so they would burn the trees when the butterflies would arrive.
Yeah. Oh my gosh.
It's extraordinary. And I love that kind of story, because we can all reflect in that. Like, we are scared of the things we don't know, but then with the years, you see the transformation of these communities. Now, the monarchs is like almost sacred for them, because it's the chicken of the golden eggs, no? For 4 months of the year, the monarchs are here, and thousands of tourists fly to Michoacán to see the butterflies, and that is an amazing economic alternative for the region. So I think that's a beautiful story. And monarchs have also shown me that citizens, just regular citizens, doing little things here and there can contribute with a massive impact to conservation. And I want to tell a very brief story about this. The science is very clear about what we need to protect the monarchs. We need to restore their habitat. We need to protect the forest where they spend the winter and to restore them. But also along the migratory route, because we are losing so much prairie every year, we can all contribute by doing two things. One is planting the native grasses in our backyards. No, if we have a backyard with native grassland, then the species during the migrations, they can feed on the flowers and they are full of energy. But also, as you know, the monarch's host plant is the milkweed. The milkweed was a very common species in the fields of the Midwest in the 50s. But with the advent of agro-industry and the use of broad-spectrum herbicides and all that, the milkweed started to disappear. And that was linked to the collapse of the monarch butterfly population. But now people is planting milkweed in their backyards, and the caterpillars are growing there because monarchs see the milkweed, they lay their eggs on, and the cycle is going back again. And just with a little backyard, you can do your part. So that kind of story, like individual actions that when combined together make a global impact, I think it's a beautiful language for any conservation project. It's the thing we all aspire, because we all want to do our part. And for the next steps that you mentioned, I don't think my work with monarchs is over by all means. I mean, the story, I think it's just the beginning. The cover story is just the beginning. I want more people to know about this. I want to contribute to generate that enthusiasm. And I want people to know about the efforts of all the people I documented with their pollinator gardens, for example. So I'm hoping I will be able to do some presentations along the migratory route, so to get people inspired about this. I am pitching an idea of a book, because I think a book about monarchs would be hugely popular, and I am I'm still young, but I am old-fashioned in my habits and in my tastes, so I love books. That's how I grew up as a photographer, doing books with Patricio in Mexico. So for me, a beautiful books about monarchs is a must, and I am going to work very hard to make that happen. Also, as a photographer, I always try to see my next steps ahead. You don't want to find yourself in a void, no? Once you finish a project, you don't want to be, okay, what do I do next? So normally what I do is I overlap one project with the other. And for a few years now, I have been working on an idea because, you know, I used to live in Mexico. I spent 15 years of my life living in Mexico, and I have worked a fair amount of time in northern Mexico. And I love it. That's pure wilderness. And that's where I discovered the concept of wilderness. But now there is a border wall between Mexico and the US, and the whole region is completely different. This wall is creating havoc. I'm going to try to do my best to tell the story of how the border wall is impacting the movement of wildlife between the US and Mexico. And I'm working with a conservationist who's a good friend, Ganesh Marin. So together we have put together this story, and we are going to be working for 2 years using camera traps, trying to document the movements of wildlife, but also the work of ranchers, both sides of the border, that are trying to restore the ecosystems just by bringing back habitat, water, and soil, which is all that normally nature needs.
Like you said, these things are very timely right now because this is happening in real time and we need to know what the exact impact is. So I can't wait for that conversation. But I want to say thank you so much for the information that you've shared with us today. I think this is such an inspiring story. And like you said, this is something that the individual can contribute to. So thank you for sharing all that information. Thank you for sharing your nuggets of wisdom.
Thank you. You know, it's such an honor, no, to be back home, to be talking about these things that I love so much with people from the Wild Foundation, which, as you know, is part of my family almost. Jackie, can I add a couple of things that I think it's super important? Because we humans are horrible in scaling up the ideas, but can you imagine the impact if every backyard in the US and Canada would ditch the lawn, no, the grass and seed native plants? Could you imagine? We would have almost a prairie back. It would be amazing. That's something that I dream of. And then the other thing I wanted to tell you is, when working with the Wild Foundation, when I was working with the Wild Foundation, I fell in love with the concept of large landscape connectivity and the idea of how big chunks of land can be connected and create a working ecosystem, no, in which the ecological processes are respected and everything works properly. And I have a tendency as a photographer, and I think that's my influence from the past working in conservation and working with wild, I have a tendency as a photographer to look for those kind of stories. Stories of connection. Stories that in which you have to think big to try to reconnect or to create back the puzzle that we have broken, no? So that's really what I aim for, and that's what I will be working very hard in the rest of my life.
We cannot wait to see what you achieve because it's going to be great. So thank you.
Thanks for listening to today's episode. Find us on social media through the Wild Foundation or through our website, wild.org. And hey, if you're feeling inspired, don't hesitate to share this podcast with those around you. And maybe even rate us on whichever platform you listen to your podcasts. We appreciate the support more than you know, and it's that support that allows our work to continue and evolve.